Thank you for joining us for live paranormal radio. From the paranormal to the unexplained, it all happens here.
It all happens here.
Looking to enhance your radio experience? Participate in our live video chat 24/7 with our live paranormal radio show hosts and other like-minded people. Live. Paranormal.com, the only interactive social chat room supported by Full Interaction Media. Stop by now and join the fun.
Stop by now and join the fun.
It's Haunted Playground right here on the Live Paranormal Radio Network. I'm your host, Sheena Metal. I'm a psychic medium. I'm an interfaith minister. I'm a 27-year talk radio host here in Los Angeles, and I'm at SheenaMetalSpiritual.com, the show at HauntedPlayground.com, and the network at LiveParanormal.com and syndicated all over the world, iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, iTunes, Podbean, Podomatic, Blog Talk Radio. The list goes on and on. So proud to be a part of all of these families, especially the Live Paranormal family and the iHeartRadio family. Every week on the show, I gather the brightest and loveliest and most beautiful minds in the spiritual and paranormal community, and we talk about all things that happen beyond the three dimensions, whether you are talking about life after death or you think there's a griffin in your backyard. It all belongs right here on Haunted Playground. My guest today is a wonderful spiritual being, a very dear friend. We've done radio shows together, done television shows together. We've done many things together, and I still love her as much as I always have. I think maybe a lot of people don't know about her spiritual side and her paranormal side, but it's one of my favorite things about her, including that she is descendant of a woman who was hanged for being a witch in Salem, which we are going to talk about. And I hope she was a witch, because just because people were unfairly murdered doesn't mean people weren't witches, because witches are badass, as we all know. My wonderful friend Susan Olson is here. Hi, darling. It's good to have you here. How are you?
Hi. I think she was a witch spelled with a different letter. my gathering are that she wasn't well-liked. She had a sharp tongue. I think she mainly wasn't well liked because she owned land, but
and she was a woman.
I also
I
heard
from
another
relative because she was a woman. I think she wasn't well liked because she was a woman.
Right, a woman who owned land, and that was, you know, that was very taboo. A woman couldn't own anything. A woman had to be owned. But then I also heard, you know, that. Ever since I found out about her, you know, you get little dribs and drabs from different relatives. And I had heard that another thing that got her scorned was that she fraternized with the Native Americans.
Oh, what was she thinking? That's not, then you're a witch for sure.
Well, exactly. And that she had an interest in their natural medicines. Well, okay, you know, we're just talking potions now.
Yeah, exactly. Well, but this is the thing, and I own the witch word as my mom owned it, and as I am descended from it because of her, in high regard. I mean, so if that makes you a witch, then it really kind of is being a witch, right? I mean, if you're putting herbs together in any way to do anything, but it's not a bad to be a witch.
I couldn't agree with you more. And when I found out about her, because I found her name in a book on ritual magic, and I became very interested in the occult. And actually, I mean, that was all kind of coincidence. I think the whole family, really. You know, my family has had interest in these things. And so, you know, I studied, to some extent, I studied the craft of the wise, witchcraft. You know, it's not really any different from any other religion. The art of medicine is the same as potions. And, you know, there was a time when they would have said that curing something with anything other than a good bloodletting is the work of the devil.
Exactly, right, yes. And now in modern-day society, we would consider bloodletting the work of the devil.
Yeah. Actually, I consider modern medicine the work of the devil, but that's another
something
story.
Something's always the work of the devil. You know, it's interesting because I have a friend who invented BioFreeze. And
BioFreak?
BioFreeze, you know BioFreeze?
Oh, freeze. Oh, okay.
And BioFreeze is wonderful if you've ever had joint pain or muscle pain. But he was trying to invent something for his grandma's arthritis, and he is by trade an anesthetician, so always inventing beauty products, right? And he just kind of went into his lab and invented BioFreeze. And then when that became successful and he sold that off to some folks who now own BioFreeze, then he's working now on a stronger BioFreeze that can be used for race horses and, you know, muscles, thicker hides, stronger for thicker hides. And I said to him one day, you know, you're an alchemist. I mean, whether it's a product you can put on your face and makes you look 15 years younger or it's BioFreeze, if you're going in a lab and tinkering and toying with things, it's alchemy. And I was worried he was going to freak, and he said, oh, absolutely I am. And that's
good.
Isn't that awesome? I mean, that you don't have to be fearful of what it's called. But I'm sorry, if you're in a lab or you're anywhere and you're using different elements and putting them together in order to create products for people, whether it's vitamins or whatever, you're an alchemist.
Yes.
And that is technically would be considered witchcraft at the time that you're – are you a seventh generation great-granddaughter? Is that what it is?
Seventh generation, yes. Yes, direct descendant.
I mean, he would have been considered a witch because he invented a product that made your muscles go numb.
Oh.
Well, that's witchcraft.
For sure, yes, that's sorcery. Yeah, and you know, the same hypocrisy that's going on today happened back then where, well, it just depends on who you make feel better and whether or not that person is in good favor today. And maybe next week they'll be in poor favor, and the fact that you helped them, now you're evil, and, you know, it's the gallows for you.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah,
yes.
And I think all of these things, I mean, God made all of these things, and it's like, okay, I've given you this beautiful, wonderful planet, and you know, I kind of feel like maybe the answer to everything is here, and God just went, okay, you know, you guys figure it out. And, you know, for there to be this fear, because there was, I mean, my goodness, look at Galileo was in prison because he said that the earth revolved around the sun. And that was blasphemy. So science has always been on this strange edge. But you know, I do sort of understand, because I think that there is a strange and ever-twisting and turning line of when do you cross over into areas of science that you shouldn't. We can work with DNA now. There's things we could do that could possibly eradicate genetic illnesses. But it could also go into, well, we want to have a blue-eyed baby who's really good at math, you know, into the weird things. And there's weird places that we go to where things screw up because we're not supposed to do that. You know, it's kind of like there's reasons why you don't marry your cousin or your sister.
Right.
You know?
Right. Yes. Well,
that's
a couple. But yeah.
Yeah,
it's true. Yeah.
There are ethical things. I have a little bit of concern about 5G. Is this okay?
Okay.
What are we doing to the etheric fabric of our beings? with these things? What are we doing to our vibrations with these other vibrations?
Right.
You know,
well, yeah,
you
gotta, I mean, I think you everything
live and
was,
learn.
Look, I'm what about cloning? Like, I understand.
Right.
Your pet dies, you want to clone your pet. But what if your pet is sick and you want to make a pet clone to use for parts? Like, that's not okay.
Yeah. Well, yeah, because you know
problem,
that all
the
rich people would have a clone.
Exactly, just for parts, for spare parts.
Yeah.
And they keep the thing like, you know, like a science fiction movie, like all up with the tubes, living but not living. And the same people that would say don't eat at KFC. Right. And the same people that would say don't eat at KFC because it's wrong to put a chicken in a crate would put their clone in a crate and think nothing of it.
Yes. Yeah.
You kind of have to. So I don't have a problem. I'm not worried about 5G. That's not my particular worry. I know some people are. My particular worry is AI. I'm worried about AI.
Oh, well.
At what point are the robots going to say, I don't want to be your sex slave and your window washer and you're the one who scrapes the barnacles off the bottom of the Golden Gate Bridge. I am a sentient being and I want an actual life.
Yeah.
And then we're going to be in trouble. And my thing I always say about AI is that if God puts the soul, you know, into you, whether it's in, you know, utero or whenever it happens, well, then if you're AI and you are made, what's to say a soul doesn't get put into you then?
Well,
why do only we have souls? Because we're biological. Right. Why do we only we get souls? Because we're biological. Well, God made us. Well, didn't God technically make the scientist who's making you in the same way that God made your parents who made you? So at what point are robots going to say, I'm a soul, I have a soul, and I don't want to be your sex toy anymore? And I think it's going to be a thing. I think we're...
It will. And also, you know, with artificial intelligence, okay, well, screw us because they're going to get more intelligent than we are, and we are not going to be in charge. But, you know, it's like my dog told me, and I can begin a sentence like that on this show. She said what made
her
soul.
On this show you can, yes.
She told me that what made her soul was the ability to feel love.
Yeah.
So... You know, I mean, why wouldn't AI be able to do that?
Well, there's no reason why. If we put everything into them that come into humans, then they're going to have everything.
Yeah, and you
that's
know,
that's the thing.
Like
if you're going to make them lifelike.
Yeah, and everybody's parents through the beginning of time has always said, we're going to get to a point where we've just gone too far, and it's all going to come crashing down. You know, back in my mother's day, and you know, she was still alive on Tuesday, she'd be 102. But it was you know, at the very beginning, it was the automobile. Well, you know, if human beings go faster than 25 miles an hour, they'll explode. And we found out, no, that's not true. Yeah,
interesting.
People thought that speed would kill people. Yeah, back then, they said speed kills. But it was estimated that 25 miles an hour was the lethal speed. And then they learned, oh, well, I guess it's not. But, yeah, and you do, like, yeah, whenever I get into an airplane, I'm going, this is defying nature. You know, I become all Amish and terrified, of course, and just think, you know, this is, we're not supposed to be up here. We've gone too far. But I have to be in New York by 6.
Yeah, I think the same thing. Isn't that funny? I think the same thing about I'm in a plane sometimes. I think about where the plane actually is. Because when you fly... your consciousness sort of becomes the inside the plane. You know,
yes.
Oh, that person smells, that baby screaming too loud. I'm claustrophobic. I have to go to the bathroom, but it's so tiny. Are they going to let me have a second ginger ale? Like, these are all the kind of things. But when you actually think about, oh, isn't this a pretty view out the window? But when you actually think about where that plane actually is.
Oh, yeah.
It's kind of a mind trip sometimes.
Oh, it's totally. Totally. Because, I mean, you're getting beyond a bird's eye view. You're getting a God's eye view. I used to always want to go up in space so that I could see, or at least be on the Concorde when they had it, so I could see the curvature of the Earth. I mean, the fact that we can see these things is just, it's so miraculous, and it does afford us this perspective that really is beautiful.
Right.
You know, after I, you know, best way of healing my terror is to have a drink or 12. And this, you know, I'm just digging on how fabulous it is that we're up so high and how beautiful it is. We can look at God's creation and look at the patterns on the ground from way up high that are huge that resemble the same patterns that you see on a leaf. You know, just amazing and beautiful. And you know, that's part of the joy of being alive in our times. But, you know, there are moral issues. You know, genetic engineering, we could get rid of an illness. But we could also have some rich guy with his clone living in the closet.
Yes.
And the cloning thing is
nobody's right,
too.
Exactly.
You know, I knew my friend had the dog that found the last living person at Ground Zero.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. The wonderful dog whose name was Tracker. And it's a beautiful story. I'm still waiting for him to make the movie about it. But he was a Canadian police officer. And in Canada, they don't let you... They had some kind of policy where they didn't let you keep your dog that you've been working with. They euthanized the dog.
Oh, that's sad. Oh, my God.
Oh,
that's horrible.
I mean, that's a nice slap in the face.
Yeah.
And so he took his dog and I basically dog-napped him and came to America. And
oh, wow.
Yeah, and just right after they got here, 9/11 happened. And so he and Tracker went down to Ground Zero. There's beautiful pictures of them together. And he found the last living person. She wrote a book about it, but she claims that an angel found her and that the angel held her hand. And it made me so angry. Like, that was a furry angel with four legs and bad breath.
Yes,
it was a furry angel. And he won a medal and an award and stuff. Of course, you know, still they can't set foot in Canada because they're criminals. But anyway, he entered a contest for, you know, do you want to clone your pet? And he talked about what a hero dog his dog had been and all the things that he'd done. He had a great police dog career. And he won the contest, and they cloned his dog. There are five clones. There was one initial clone that was older. You know, they cloned once, and then I think like 2 months later, then they did, I think, four more. And, you know, and I was privy to witnessing all of this, and every one of those clones had their own completely unique personality. I'm like, boy, isn't that just God's way? He's going to find a way for them to be individuals. And maybe that's just mammals, because I think insects are very good at socialism. But I think mammals have to be individuals. They're just adorable.
Yeah.
All of them are hero dogs. They're all doing rescue of some kind or another. I think two of them are cancer sniffers. And one's a police dog, one's a cadaver sniffer. But they're all doing brave, heroic work.
Okay.
So I love that story.
That's beautiful.
And Tracker passed away, I think, just before the second round of clones were born.
Oh.
Yeah. I don't think he got to see the second
story.
Round. He saw the first one, though. Yeah. And this guy was my friend. He was also my manager. I would hear Tracker in the background. And Tracker suffered quite a bit because his hind legs are going. Of course, he had the best doggy daddy in the world who got him one of those harnesses with the wheels in the back and
Took
him out to
yes.
the beach. Yeah, and, he lived as well as he could, but he had health issues because of Ground Zero, because of all the fumes and everything. And I'm just wondering if James, my friend, I haven't been in touch with him. I need to see if I can find him again. I hope he's doing okay, but an awful lot of people suffered, from being exposed to all of the toxins at Ground Zero.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I have a lot of friends who either had it themselves or had friends that suffered. And, it was horrible. I mean, as we pass the 20-year anniversary, right, people are still suffering from it.
Well, yeah, and they're saying, there were the initial 3,000, but there's been something like 6,000 that have passed since because of complications and lung ailments and such. And, my best friend, she's right there. And she's like, oh, it's so wrong. She stayed away. She was able to stay away for a while. She's like, it was unmistakable. You smelled the air around there, and you just knew that it was going to be doing some permanent damage.
Yeah. Have you been to the memorial?
No, I haven't. Isn't that odd? Have I? I've been there since it's been open, but I think, the last few times I've been in New York, it's just been in and out. And if I have a little chance to see my bestie, then that's what I do. But I have not seen the memorial. Have you?
Yeah, I went there in 2006 to do the vagina monologues for the first time for me.
Mm.
And they were just digging the foundation for the memorial.
Oh, okay.
So they were digging it.
Oh,
and
yeah,
I can tell you, it
in progress.
The energy is so, like, if you're an empath, seriously take a tranquilizer before you go.
Oh, no,
because the energy, I don't know what it's like now, but, I mean, I felt sick for days from just the energy. And you don't even, it's not even like an emotional thing. It's just a spiritual thing. It just hits you. All that death and all that fear and the panic, like it still hangs over Tribeca. I mean, it's not.
Do
you know what I mean?
Yeah, it does, because I was actually right there, because if you remember, there was the Ground Zero Mosque that was going to be built, and a lot of people thought that was a huge insult, and I was one of those people. And I was just going to happen to be in New York at the time of the rally, and I contacted, that's how I met Robert Spencer, who had organized the rally, and said I'd like to go to it. But I was taking pictures, and there was like just a strange horizon, because all they had done was dug. They were digging. And so there was just this weird empty space. And there was definitely an ominous energy to it that you could cut it with a knife. People said that I would feel things like that, like I'd feel the strange energy in Salem. Strange energy. And, I'm probably kind of thick-headed, so I don't usually feel that. But I definitely did it Ground Zero, very much.
Yeah, absolutely. It's I do feel the strange energy at Salem. But I like it.
Oh, okay. Well, see, that's the way I felt. And it was not my great-grandmother's home, because she lived in Andover. It was just the trials that took place in Salem. But I found that all of Massachusetts felt like home. Everywhere
yeah.
I went in Massachusetts felt really inviting and like I'd been there. And the odd thing is that my cousin feels that. She has never been anywhere in Massachusetts, but she wants to move there. I'm like, well, don't you think you ought to visit the place first? And she's like, no. She's just going to move.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah. And
yeah,
so
I feel that way about Ireland.
Family thinks she's nuts. And, you know, my sister's going, oh, no, that's crazy. I said, no. If she feels that intuitive about it, I think she's right. And I know
I agree.
I've
it could totally
had a good
be...
vibe.
Yeah.
I love
could totally
Somerville.
Be a past life thing.
I, you know, that's what I'm thinking. And
right.
Yeah, you know, it's related to a lot of the books that she's read. And so my sister's saying, oh, she thinks that because she's read all these books that she's going to like the place, and she doesn't even know. I said, Diane, maybe she likes those books so much because there is an energy there. There's a past life experience or something. You know, if she
yeah.
feels this strongly about it, I support her.
Yeah, I
you know,
absolutely
she
do.
Said, oh, I think it was a mistake. Okay.
I feel that way about Ireland. People always say, how come you've never been to Ireland? And I always say, because I don't think I'll come home.
Oh,
I
boy.
I think probably when I go, I'm
that's
going
for
to
sure.
stay. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. I kind of, well, I did
yeah.
definitely feel that way, especially in England. Just, you know, funny because I've never been to Norway, and I'm certainly more Norwegian than I am British or I'm
yeah,
like
but
Welsh.
See, I think you're, I don't sell yourself short. I think you're super Celty.
That's what I think, because that's what I relate to. Probably more England, because I've been to Ireland and I loved it, but there's something about England, and then I think, well, maybe it's just because, you know, the first heroes in my life were the Beatles. So to me, you know, everything England is wonderful. All my favorite rock stars are from there. But there's this feeling of identifying with it, which I don't feel when I look at pictures of Norway. I think it's beautiful, but I don't feel that gut feeling.
Yeah.
But who knows?
Yeah.
I haven't been there yet. But I'm certainly
yeah.
more Norwegian.
But you're half and
than
half,
even,
right? Wasn't your,
well,
wasn't your dad Norwegian
happened,
and your mom was kind of a Celt mutt?
Yes, yes. She's British Isles mongrel. However, if you go back far enough on my mother's side, you get to the Vikings again. So
okay.
when I got
right.
my DNA done, I'm 87% Scandinavian.
Oh, my God. You're literally the whitest girl in the world.
Exactly. Exactly. although I did two of them. One of them said that I had Iberian coast. But the second one was like, no, it's just white, more white, and then some white on top of that.
But don't we all have African, because didn't we all come from
well,
Lucy?
We would have
so don't
to.
We all have a little
we
bit of that? Doesn't everybody's DNA come back like one-tenth of a percent African?
No.
One
of my best friends, her DNA came back like that, but no, it's so far in the distance that it doesn't get traced. But we know it's got to
wow.
be there somewhere, because we all came
sure.
from there.
Sure.
But, you know, it, probably if you go back far enough, it's Pleiadian.
Right. Maybe that's why you don't have the African. Maybe you're just Pleiadian.
Well, that could be. Yeah.
You know, I have not had mine done yet.
Yeah, I know people that are like, I don't want my DNA in a data bank. I'm like, what?
Oh, no, I want it done.
I don't really understand
that. I just haven't done it yet. I have this fear that, what if it, I'm like, what if it comes back and says, you're not Irish at all? Then what do? Because, you know, my whole background's a little sketchy with mom in the orphanage, and who knows who dad is, and do you know what I mean? There's a lot of variables.
Oh, but that would make me want to do it even more. But you know you came from your mom and that your mom's Irish.
You
don't really know
what
that.
What if someone lied to her? What if somebody lied? What if somebody didn't know? Or what if somebody told her something that they heard but it's not true? Or, you know,
right.
It's funny because
been a
the
lot
story
of people
that.
Like that.
The story
that
her older sister
told
her.
That they're Italian or whatever.
Uh-huh. And then it turns out they're not, right?
Wow. Yeah.
It's actually on the commercial for Ancestry.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Somebody has a very strongly ethnic name, and it turns out it just happens to be that the name stayed forever way back somewhere. Somebody... It was just a married name, yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's like when my mother used to go shopping, whatever, and you know, writing a check, she'd have to show her ID, and they'd say, oh, Olsen, well, you don't look Scandinavian. It's like, well, duh. I'm Mrs. Olsen.
I know. Aren't people ridiculous like that? I know, people are so silly. Yeah, people always say, well, you can't be Irish, you have brown hair. And I'm like, well, but my mother had brown hair, and she looked like a fairy, so.
Well, and
my mother did look
Irish
like a fairy.
People, they're not all redheads.
I know.
Plenty
and my mom's
Irish
hair
people.
Was very red. It was very brownish red, her hair.
Yeah.
So she practically was a redhead. But, and mine is, too. If mine gets in the sun, it's super red. But it's interesting how, you know, we sort of create our ethnic profile, right? We decide how we feel in our soul. And it's interesting how ancestry is making us rethink things, which is, you know, it's like my cats are both blues, right? And everybody says, well, how do you know they're blues? How do you know they're not just mutts? Well, how do you know the pedigree isn't some tomcat didn't get in there and screw up the pedigree, you know?
Exactly.
I'm not, you know, my ex had a papered, she would always say she's a papered Pomeranian. I'm sorry, but that dog looked like there was a chihuahua in the woodpile. She didn't look like any Pomeranian I ever saw. She looked like a long, red-haired chihuahua.
Oh,
and now that I live with
corruption and all of that.
Exactly.
And
now that I live with a
chihuahua. Her intelligence and, you know, niceness and other traits. But, you know, because people, because there's such overpopulation of this species. But, you know, I wish that they'd had the DNA tests for dogs back when I had my Cortez. Because I smuggled him over the border from Mexico. And he looked like a Bernese Mountain Dog. And I met his mother.
Right.
She was a German Shepherd mix, but it's like, dang!
Wow.
I mean, he was so beautiful, and but I think he did have Bernese Mountain Dog blood because they tend to have heart problems, and he died of a heart attack and had this rare weird condition that that he spared me by dying suddenly, because God knows I would have spent thousands of dollars on specialists to try to, you know, save his life. And he spared me that. and he would have done that. That would have been his choice.
You know, I did that with my first cat. I spent like $5,000 and $10,000 to have all the tests run. And they put in a feeding tube, and I was supposed to tube feed her for a month. And honestly, all it did was just keep her away from me when all those tests were being run. And two days after she came home with the tube, she died. And I decided at that point that I was never going to do that again with an animal. I'll never do it again.
Right.
Now they get my cat now has cancer, and they get the best quality of life they can have until there's no longer a quality of life, and then they get to go home.
Yes,
but
yes.
I'm never again.
Complete agreement. Complete. I mean, it's like I had a family member that had a cat on pretty much life support, and you know, she had on a special diet, and it's like she hated her food. I'm like, oh come on, how much more time are you going to squeeze out of her by making her miserable?
It's
about quality of life.
I remember when my cat Seamus, they were trying to convince me to do that thing they do because he had the thyroid, the Graves' disease, tumor on his thyroid, where they put him in that radioactive place. They have to go stay there for like 6 weeks. That's horrible enough. Yeah, they take him to a radioactive place, and you can't be around them because they could radioactive-fy you. So they basically put him in a cage, and they IV radiate them to make the tumor go away. It's basically like radiation.
Oh.
But they can't come home because you can't be exposed to them. And after they come home, you have to keep them in a bathroom for like 3 weeks. I did the surgery to take the tumor off. I said if the surgeries don't work, ultimately it was his kidneys. It was not that. He had both lobes, had a tumor. I did one, then another one. I did the other one. But he was 10, and he was relatively spry afterwards. So one day I was bringing him in for a post-op checkup, and this old lady was coming out as I was going in. And she said, oh, you have an orange tabby, too. What is your cat doing? And I said, oh, he just had a thyroid surgery, and he's going in to have his two-week checkup. And she's like, oh, Freckles has cancer, and we're doing chemotherapy. And we come here 4 times a week to get the chemotherapy. And she holds this carrier up, Susan, and it was like the ghost of a cat. Like, I'm pretty sure Freckle's soul had already left his body. This poor thing looked at me and it was like, kill me. Can you kill me? Will you please
that
just
would make
kill
a
me?
Great scene in the movie. Yeah, kill me now.
And
please,
I don't have any idea how you could keep a cat alive for that. And luckily, I have this terrific vet that's taking care of Molly.
That's
and when
awesome.
She first examined her, she said, and she's almost 18, so chemotherapy's not really an option. And I thought, oh, thank God. Because you know, some of these places, they try to talk you into this. And I remember when my dad had brain cancer, right? I know I told you this. They wanted us to put him in 25 treatments of radiation, 5 days a week for 5 weeks. Right. He would have had to go in an ambulance from the nursing home to the hospital. He was barely even sentient. And the whole thing was, well, he might get 3 more months if we do it. And I thought, three more months?
And
I mean, I blinked my eyes and 3 months have passed. Right,
yeah.
3 months
three
of being
months
a semi-vegetable.
What?
Right, exactly. And you know what? 3 months is nothing. That's 3 months? Like, it's 3 months, my birthday was already almost 6 months ago. It seems like it was last week. It's not worth it. And our obsession to keep everything alive is very bizarre because on one hand with our Judeo-Christian ethic, right, we're obsessed with dying and going to heaven. I just want this all to be over so I can go to heaven. But man, the minute anything goes wrong, it's how can we keep ourselves alive till the very last minute?
Well, I mean,
and
it's
I just
so
think it
kind of frightened
you know,
me. It's, you know, look at all the people in nursing homes that changed their advance directives. And it always scared me that, well, maybe when you get really, really close to the edge, you look over and you see there's nothing there. You go, oh, I guess I'll stay.
Oh, shit. Right.
I know.
Exactly.
That's not a pleasant thought.
No. No.
I think all we can do is try to make things as good as we can while we're here. I mean, my Ryan was the cat that, he had fur growing on the inside of his eyelids, and he was all messed up, and I had rescued him from my mother's nursing home. And And as I went in, I thought, you know, I was talking to friends. I said, oh, how can I do this? I got to spend a couple grand on him. And I said, they said, you just do it. He's yours now. You just do it, and you don't think about it. So I did it,
yeah.
And then the treatment was worse than the disease because he was such a skittish cat, being almost feral, and it was so hard to gain his trust that putting these drops in his eyes and doing all this stuff that I had to do to him was killing the trust that I was trying to build. And
yeah.
So I ended up going, you know what? We've taken care of the worst of it. We have to take you in every 3 years or so to get your eyelids shaved, okay. But I'm not going to make your day-to-day living so miserable.
Oh, my God. Yeah, yes. The inside of the eyelids had to get shaved. That's
yes.
Horrible. I've never heard of that before.
Isn't
that's
that
horrible.
Awful, poor little thing? And his mother had, I guess, shunned him and left him for dead because he was messed up. And me and some little kids were trying to catch him and couldn't catch him and go home. There was a thunder and lightning and rain that night. All I could think about was this little kitten. And my sister was going to the nursing home the next day. I said, look out for a kitten. And she found him, and my brother-in-law caught him. And said, okay, we caught him. What, now what? I said, bring him here. I want him. Like, great.
Aww.
Welcome to your vet bills. I'm like, I spent the whole night listening to the rain going, oh, that little kitten's out there all by himself in the rain.
Yeah. Yeah.
I got my boy. His middle name for about a week or two, because it was an Armenian nursing home, it was the Armenian word for thunder. And then I forgot what that word was. And my neighbor who had told it to me moved away. So I was like, I don't
know
what my cat's name is.
Oh, my God, that's hysterical.
And that night I had watched the movie Ararat, which was all about the, my mother was living in a nursing home called the Ararat home. And she was allowed in. She was an Armenian, but it was the best nursing home in the country. And so I'm watching the movie Ararat, which is all about the Armenian genocide. And the rain's coming down. I'm thinking about this kitten. So it was a very dramatic night. It's like, if you don't find that kitten, I'm going to get in the car and go over to the home and look for him. I have to have him.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, I felt that way about mine, my Cullen, because, you know, they were going to euthanize him that day.
Oh, well, your Cullen is your soul.
And he was, right? Is that boy is he the best?
I haven't even met him yet, and I know he's your soulmate.
Oh, my God.
I just know because I know that you know these things, and you wouldn't be gushing the way you are if it wasn't totally spectacular. And I know
and it's interesting because
I know that exists. And I know
it's
so magical.
I'm sorry?
It's just
he's
so
completely
magical.
I know
what it is. And I can't say that I necessarily have had exactly that. But, I mean, I think you're having the ultimate experience of having that cat spirit mate.
Yeah. Yeah, and I have it with Molly, who I believe was my first cat, Aaron, and I think he was my cat, Liam. And everybody wondered, why don't you put Liam to sleep? He pees, he sprays, put him to sleep. Everyone's trying to get me to kill that cat all the time. And I was like, no, but he was he was a sweet cat, but he had so much anxiety, which is why he sprayed. Because he had been beat up in his life before I got him. But this little guy has really only known us, and he's so cute because he'll be going all around the house playing and doing things and playing. And then all of a sudden he'll probably realize he hasn't hugged me in a while. And he'll run into the room and literally leap up into my arms so that his arms are around my neck and his head is like over my shoulder. And he'll just like cling. And then sometimes if I've been gone for a couple hours and I come home, he does the same thing, but he rubs his face all over my face, and I get like 50 kisses. Like he is like a cat who kisses you on the mouth. And he's fantastic. He is the most loving, loving being.
That's so weird, because my Sasha, which, I'll speak in hushed tones because Smokey's here and he was his brother. But Sasha died of FIP 8 years after getting the vaccination. Don't vaccinate your cats FIP if they're not going to be outdoor cats. It's not, you don't need to, and it's going to be more harm than good. But he would get behind and he'd freak me out because he'd stand up. He'd get on my desk chair and stand up, and he'd hug. And I'd have people pick him up, and he'll hug you. And I'd go, Sasha, you know, give her a hug. And he would hug. And he used to get up on the back behind me on my chair, from behind, put his arms around my neck and start nibbling on my ear. And it was like, you know, he was like Pepe Le Pew, being Mr. I love you so much. I mean, it was almost perverse.
Right. I don't think it's perverse. I think it's fantastic. I think if everybody in the world was as loving and effusive as Cullen, we would live in a much different world.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
Because he only knows
that's why
there's nothing negative.
Yeah,
right. He is like a little feline bonobo. He sits at the front door with these big eyes, looking out the window, fascinated by everything. Nothing scares him. Nothing worries him. He just, you know, if my girlfriend's middle son is a musician, and if he's got like 10 guys in his room playing, he'll just walk in there with all those like adult, like young adult boys, and he's like, oh, I'm just hanging out with the boys now because I'm a big boy. And like just loves the giant dog. We have a pit mix and a Yorkie mix, a Yorkie Chihuahua mix, and he just loves. He doesn't know.
Jeez.
And if somebody snaps at him, he kind of looks like, what? And it's so funny because the big dog has a problem with depression, and she just loves him, and he's fixed her depression. You know, have you ever had one like that fixed everybody's problems?
Yeah. Tabitha was kind of that way. She was like a little nursemaid. But, man, it almost sounds like you got Sasha. Sasha reincarnated to be your cat. That sounds a lot like my Sasha Bear and Kitty. Yeah. And very cool, not afraid of anything. And, you know, anybody would come over. He wasn't so much the greeter as he was, okay, let me make sure. Yeah, you're okay. All right. I'll let you in. But if he knew
that
somebody
was
didn't
kind
want
of touched,
cats,
though, right?
Hmm?
Yeah.
If he knew that somebody was allergic or didn't like cats, he was a devil. Like, hi.
Oh, okay.
Hi. I'm going to get right in your face. Hi. Oh, am I making you uncomfortable?
Oh,
he's a little
I think this little guy would just be like, oh, you don't like cats? Oh, I'm sorry. That's sad. Oh, I'm sorry.
Aww.
I'll stay away. I mean, he's just, like, so great. I can't believe we're totally out of time. The time just flies with us. Where can people find you online, my friend?
I can't believe they're totally talking about their cats.
Who cares? It's just fun. Yeah, people just listen to good conversation. Where can people find you online, my friend?
You know, I'm going to be doing a podcast on Tuesday. People, look it up. It's called Quite Frankly, and it's at 7 o'clock Eastern time. He's on every day, 7 o'clock Eastern, and I will be on Tuesday the 21st, my mother's 102nd birthday, and that should be really
beautiful.
Good.
That's awesome. Check it out, my friends, and thank you for being here, darling. It's always such a pleasure to have you here on the show because you are completely
the
awesome.
Pleasure.
You know how much
mine.
I love you, and you're such a great radio presence, and it's so great. I love you, sweetie. Take care. Susan Olson, everybody. She's terrific. If you missed the links, hauntedplayground.com. I'm at sheenametalspiritual.com for all your spiritual needs. liveparanormal.com. Check us out on iHeartRadio, one of my favorite places to be. I'm here every Wednesday at 6 o'clock Pacific time and my Raising the Vibration show every Tuesday at 5 o'clock Pacific time. Tonight I'll be on Live Paranormal's video channel where I am every Wednesday night at 9 o'clock doing the companion to this called Haunted Playground After Dark. Please check it out. Till I see you next time, seek peace, live in love, lead with kindness, embrace unity, always raise your vibration. I'm Sheena Metal. I love you so much. I'll see you next week.